Shit, that's her guy.
Wait, is he blind?
He's lost his sight in Iraq or something.
That's kind of fucked up to rob a blind guy, isn't it?
Just because he's blind don't mean he's a fucking saint, bro.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus Don't Breathe movie retrospective series.
Who's there?
Hosted by Jacob.
Now, I don't know who he is, but I know who he's not.
Arnie.
You're a bad man. A man who's done terrible things.
And Stuart.
Who are they?
I don't know.
This episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
You tell me what God would allow this.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Now, you're gonna see what I see.
Today we're discussing Don't Breathe 2, starring Stephen Lang, Brendan Sexton III, Madeline Grace, directed by Roto Sayagues. This is Arnie, and don't come near me. I am no father. I have killed. I have podcasted. I am nothing but a monster.
And Stuart.
And this is the host who still doesn't want to breathe in theaters, Jacob.
I don't either. I have to say, I was scouring the times. When was this theater the most empty? It's not like it was ever full. It did not open at number one. It did not open at number two. I saw it second weekend. One other person in the entire theater, and I hope he was not sick.
I didn't even go to a theater to see this one. I went to a drive-in. That's where I'm back at. And yeah, at least I got a double feature because they're like, if you want to come early and just stick around long enough, you could watch whatever we throw up on the screen. So
what was the other one?
Free Guy.
That's what I wanted to see.
Well, I'll talk about that too. It ties into this Don't Breathe thing. So you'll get a little mini review.
I was there Friday the 13th. It was a matinee. I figured 3 o'clock wouldn't be too many people, but it sounds like maybe I had more than you, Arnie. There was about 3 different clusters, as it were. Couples. It was kind of a date movie, weirdly enough.
Murder, rape. Yeah, perfect date movie.
But not much of a reaction. I don't, like, it felt like, you know, normally I can gauge, like, suspense moments and all of that by how the crowd is going to respond. There wasn't enough to get any kind of indicator on how the movie was playing to a large crowd, because, yeah, 8 people ain't enough.
I could tell how it was playing to my audience. I went with Marjorie, and then there was one other guy in the theater, and halfway through I was the only one awake.
Well, maybe part of the problem is people don't remember the original. They got it out in half the time of a Stranger sequel, but 5 years is kind of an eternity if you're building a franchise. And this one, it took its time to reassemble Blind Man and the home invasion scenario.
I mean, there's no stars in these films. Like, why 5 years? If that first one's successful, again, like we talked about with The Strangers, you get that sequel out the next year. You got to strike while the iron's hot.
Seems like a good idea, but I did notice something. Fede Alvarez is the original director, and we talked about him with, you know, he did Evil Dead before this and Girl in the Spider's Web after this. He is trying to get his brand going. He has a production label, Bad Hombre. And you'll even see a character wear that baseball hat in this movie promoting his new films.
I noticed that.
Yes. He is trying to be a producer. And when you're trying to be a producer, you want to, his quote is, "I want to promote new filmmakers in the horror, thriller, and sci-fi universe." I think that he didn't necessarily want to come back to Don't Breathe because he had more to say. I think it's more like, what can we get out there? Oh, I can get the rights to Texas Chainsaw Massacre and do a reboot of that. And yeah, this was a big hit for me, more than Elizabeth Salander and even Evil Dead. I feel like the original Don't Breathe was his feather in his cap, the biggest thing that he's done. So yeah, I guess you go with what you have. And this was the film that he could put out as one of the first of Bad Hombre's new lineup.
Well, I mean, that's a decent guess. But part of it is, while doing the first movie, he and co-writer Roto Sayagues, while making the first film, came up with this idea of, wouldn't it be cool if the blind man did this? during the first film. They started outlining and selling the second film during the first one. The sequel was announced in 2016, and Alvarez was going to return as director, and Raimi went on the record. It's only the greatest idea for a sequel I've ever heard. I'm not kidding.
Wait, this movie we're going to talk about is the greatest idea for a sequel ever?
Yes.
Oh, Sam, that hurts your reputation in my eyes. If this is what you're saying is the greatest, maybe he just doesn't hear a lot of pitches for sequels. Maybe that's what it is. I'll try to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, let's dig into what he might be talking about. I think the advertising told us it wasn't going to be a retread. At no point did I see Jane Levy. The obvious thing would be, oh, the final girl from the last film is now being... What would she live in, a apartment building, maybe a college sorority house? I don't know where you stick her.
Protecting her little sister from the blind man.
Yeah, she's in California somewhere, Hotel California, and we have a blind man breaking in, and you just do it all over again. That would have been the easy and obvious thing to do. This movie, the trailer, told me, nope, we are now going to be aligning ourselves with the blind man, that the monster from the original film is now the protagonist of the sequel.
Which I thought was going to be a fake out, because that first film, we talked about it, all the shifting morality, the ambiguity, no one's a great person in that film. And so, yeah, okay, you're going to try to tell me he's the hero. Obviously, that's not true. Not this murdering rapist. He can't be the hero. Like, we'll see some kind of, and I'll talk about it when we get in the movie, but I thought I knew where this was going and what the twist was going to be. And oh boy, oof, where this thing goes, but...
I'm right there with you, Jacob. I heard people bitching online that the blind man was such a good villain in the first one. So just despicable and creepy. How are you going to try to make him the good guy? But if you look at that trailer, the trailer showed him fighting off people and trying to protect a little girl. And so that made him seem like the good guy. But there was the line dropped that everything the blind man is telling you, little girl, is a lie. And so what I thought was it was a fake out, or there'd be a twist where the blind man may seem like the hero in the trailer or even in the first part of the movie, but he's actually going to be the worst person in the film. I was completely wrong, but that was my guess.
So it sounds like both of you thought that the sequel would have to keep blind man as the villain, that there was no way that you could go with the idea that now he's a superhero, a vigilante, someone trying to work away his sin and do right by a little girl that needs his help.
No, yeah, he never struck me as that. He is Jason. He is Michael Myers. He is Freddy. He's the slasher. And that was the interesting thing with that first one is, oh, you broke into someone's house and it's where Jason lives. Oops, that's a fun idea. And so I thought that's how you position the blind man as the villain, the slasher of this franchise.
Well, one of the things I did think about last week, you know, we talked about it a little, was what else might he have done? If everything is built around the idea that he was so destroyed by losing his daughter that he acted on that, and yes, it was inappropriate, but that's the only thing that was driving him, that he wouldn't go around and hurt anybody else, well, then maybe he is just a tragic figure. Not a hero, but, you know, maybe not a villain. But I had thought maybe there was other bad things that he had done. Maybe we didn't know all the things he was up to.
Yeah, we didn't know anything about him from that first film, except he was a vet.
Not even his name.
Right, which apparently we do have a name now, or at least that's what IMDb tells me. Norman Nordstrom?
Yeah, I didn't hear that name in the film. I might have missed it, but I saw it in the credits.
Norman Nordstrom both sounds like a superhero name with the alliteration.
Yes.
And I think of Nordstrom's as being a very high-end store. Like,
yeah, I was thinking you go shopping for perfume at the...
Yeah.
Yeah, like kind of like Tiffany's, you know, like Saks Fifth Avenue. Like, this is not his brand. Like, I feel like he is not a Norman Nordstrom. And I don't know where they got that. I don't know if it was somewhere tucked in an Easter egg somewhere, but I never heard the name in the film last week or in this movie.
Okay, so I didn't miss it while listening to the audio over an FM radio.
We all missed it. I don't know. I didn't get it.
Well, what Alvarez said is they wanted to fuck with people. And he came up with a new term, I think, is the blind man is an anti-villain now. Instead of an anti-hero, he's an anti-villain.
Let's walk through that. An anti-hero is someone that we are rooting for but is not heroic. An anti-villain is someone that we don't like and is not the villain. Okay. I might agree with that. To be determined what that means. But yeah, they took risks. I will say that. I don't think it's the greatest sequel pitch I ever heard, but they are not just doing the last movie part and parcel, just replay, change the names, do it all again. There are lazy sequels, and we've covered many of them. They're taking risks. I appreciate that. Let's see if it works. Arnie, why don't you give him that plot? We'll find out if it's the greatest sequel ever made.
It's been a decade since the events of Don't Breathe 1, but when this sequel opens, we find the blind man, real name Norman Nordstrom, played by Stephen Lang, living a happy life in his rundown Detroit home. He's happy because he's not alone. He has an 11-year-old daughter, Phoenix. But Norman is highly protective, homeschooling the girl and rarely letting her go into town. Her dream seems to be to go live in the orphanage in downtown Detroit.
It's like an anti-Oliver Twist. Like, please keep me the orphan. I really want that.
On a rare trip into town, Phoenix is stopped by a strange man who seems ready to kidnap her, but she's saved by her dog, Shadow. That night, the strange man and several of his friends break into Norman's house. They kill Shadow and think taking Phoenix away from a blind man will be easy. They don't know Norman was a Navy SEAL, and he puts up a big fight, killing a couple of them. The leader of the gang comes, named Raylan, played by Brendan Sexton III. Raylan tells Phoenix he's her real father, and her birth name is Tara. Raylan and his wife Josephine ran a meth lab. The lab exploded, and Raylan went to jail for 8 years. He wasn't sure if his daughter survived the fire until he saw her in town that day. The girl still isn't sure she wants to go with her biological father, so one of his men knock her out. They burn down Norman's house with Norman inside and take the girl to meet her mother. Josephine was badly hurt in the meth lab explosion and she's dying 8 years later. The only way to survive is with a heart transplant. Raylan and Josephine didn't go to find their daughter for a family reunion. They have an underground surgeon ready to remove Phoenix's heart and put it in Josephine. They get Phoenix on the operating table when they're interrupted by Norman. He made it out of the burning house and used Raylan's dog to find their lair. All the goons attack Norman, and he kills them all. Josephine is killed when Raylan's gunshot goes wide and hits the woman in the chest. Norman plummets his thumbs into Raylan's eyes, so now they're both blind. But Raylan isn't dead, and he stabs Norman in the back. So Phoenix grabs a machete and stabs Raylan in the back, killing her biological father while trying to save her adoptive one. Norman tells Phoenix it's too late. He tells her to go to the shelter she's always wanted to be at, as he bleeds out. She goes to the shelter and finally makes some friends her own age, but she keeps the name of Phoenix as credits roll.
And as they start, we get a very similar drone aerial shot. That very memorable opening to the first movie was we saw Jane Levy being dragged. We weren't even sure it was Jane Levy. We see a body being dragged down the street in broad daylight in what looks like a normal, although dilapidated, suburban neighborhood. Now we see a little child running from a burning house, and I think, maybe we're supposed to be led in this direction, she's escaping blind man. She was the next person he tried to make his daughter, and she burned the place down trying to get away.
Well, absolutely. I thought, okay, they're doing the same thing as the first one, so this is a flash forward. The house is going to end up on fire. This girl's going to be running away. Like, I thought we were going to be building up to that.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I thought we're just following the pattern of the last one. This is going to be late in the movie. We're going to see this happen. Nope, not what happens at all. This is, it says 8 years later, and I'm like, wait, is that 8 years after the drone shot we just saw? Or is it 8 years after the first movie? It did leave me a little confused, but no, it's the girl is now going to be 8 years older.
Yeah, let's be clear in our confusion. I'm not even sure we're in Detroit anymore. Is this Detroit? I'm assuming that the blind man relocated to a different neighborhood but didn't leave the city.
Are you talking about when we jump 8 years? Because all of a sudden it feels like we're in a forest or something as this girl's running around doing these exercises with the blind man. Yeah, it does not feel like dilapidated Detroit.
He's on the outskirts of a city. We know that blind man has gone deeper into hiding, that he had to leave the place that he was at before, and maybe that was the house that was burning. We're still unclear about that. He has wound up being a father. We will see that little girl now being christened Phoenix, appropriate enough, coming out of the flames of the building. She is now, well, I figured this out because it was in the trailer. She's running from the dog. She seems to be in peril. But of course, this is just a survivalist exercise, and he's training her to be as good as he is in defending herself.
Here's the thing about that trailer. It spoils the biggest moments in this film, and this is one of them.
The house he lives in is very much like the house from the last movie. Not exactly, but they are going to repeat some action beats, like falling out of specific windows from the last movie. So I took it as this is supposed to be the same house and supposed to be in Detroit, but this was actually a Serbian film, not to be confused with the Serbian film, but it was filmed in Serbia, so...
Whereas the first one was filmed in Detroit.
No, it was shot in Hungary.
Oh.
But it was all soundstage.
Okay. So they didn't get the same setback. And I think, can I just say, it doesn't really matter where he is. It's a city. He lives on the outskirts. He's trying to prevent her from even going into the city. He uses this survivalist test as an excuse to say, well, you know, because I caught you there, I got the gun away from you. That means you don't get the privilege of going into town with the florist. But truthfully, she's a missing child, just to jump to the secret. He doesn't want anyone possibly recognizing her.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I thought he was just being possessive. All right, we had that opening scene, and yet I still found myself, because I didn't know if that scene would be later in the movie, and I know it said 8 years later. I was just a little confused going in, watching this only one time for this review. I thought this might be the product of the next woman he kidnapped and artificially inseminated. I thought this might be his biological daughter, and when she's asking about her mother, he's saying, oh, I lost all the photos in a fire, I lost her in the fire. I thought, well, of course that's what you're going to say, because you don't want to say, I had her chained up in the mattresses in my basement and then shoved a turkey baster in her.
Yeah, that would have been my theory going into this film, but because of that opening with the fire and the girl running away, and then it says we jump 8 years later, and he's talking about the mom dying in a fire, I'm like, okay, she's been abducted. Or it was a girl, whatever the backstory with this fire is, she didn't have parents anymore, so he adopted her. Maybe it's not as malicious as kidnapping, but... He shouldn't be having her.
But, well, let's drill into that. If he was doing all the bad things he was doing simply to get a daughter, and this is a child that basically lost her parents, is an orphan, have they both found exactly what they need? Is he a bad guy anymore that he wants to be her father and nothing more? I don't see him killing on the weekends. I don't even see that he's, you know, in training her. It's not any more abusive than many superhero movies I've seen. So,
well, I'll say this. The murders aside, maybe that's self-defense. I don't know how the courts are going to judge on the events of that first film, but he raped and he has not served time for that. So he's not forgiven by me for doing that.
Okay.
All right. I mean, let's get semantics. Is it rape if it's not using your genitals, or is it merely assault if it's using implements?
Forcibly impregnating a woman, yeah, against her will. I'll put it that way. Does that work for you? Like, I still don't like that. That's still creepy.
Yeah. And sexual assault can even, yeah, it can be any gender can sexually assault another with any object. It doesn't have to be their body part. So yes, he inserted things into another person that is sexual assault.
Yeah, true. Sexual assault, yes.
And he's going to say rape at the end.
He is, and I it's what made me wonder, did he rape? Depends on your terms, I guess. I guess it's kind of like losing virginity. Exactly what point does it happen? There's specific markers where you know.
What is sex? I mean, are we going to really get into that? I think that's a bigger subject, but yes.
We can get Bill Clinton in here and ask what the meaning of is.
Mm-hmm. So, at any rate, I think we all agree that man was really gross and violated people, and we're not prone to like him. And yet, I will admit, it's an interesting gambit to say, but now that he's got what he needed, he won't be monstrous again. He has been reformed, and it will be, of course, if you set up a little girl here, she's going to be the MacGuffin, the thing that gets taken away from him. That's going to send him back on the path to being a killer again. That we are to understand this man really has two sides. Maybe this is Norman Nordstrom, like the nice guy that just wants to be a family man is the good side of him. And blind man is when he has to kill the fuckers that won't let him be a good dad. I don't know, though. I don't really like this parenting relationship. Maybe that's just judgy on my part.
It feels very abusive.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see any child living in this way, being homeschooled in survivalist tendencies. But, I mean, it does happen. I mean, I'll put it out there that that's my values. That's not necessarily to say that all people are going to agree with that.
Not that this is comedic, but all I kept thinking of was Kimmy Schmidt, that Netflix TV series, where the women lived in the bunker thinking the world had been destroyed. They were down there. And that's kind of how this girl was, I felt like.
Yeah, except the blind man is willfully lying to her, like knowingly lying to her. That's why I say it's abusive.
Well, John Hamm was knowingly lying to Kimmy Schmidt.
I didn't watch Kimmy Schmidt.
Okay. Well, she's in a bunker in basically a sex cult because they thought that the whole world had been destroyed. And because they never see the world, they have no way to know. And that's kind of what I thought was going on here, too, is how much does she even know? He doesn't have a TV, it appears. I mean, he did in the last film, but we don't see one ever turned on in this one. So all she does is study and do survivalist things and... But she knows about French. She does go into town with the florist and goes to a playground.
Yeah. Hold up. Hold up. This man who doesn't believe in God and like steals himself away still is going to have a weekly delivery of like lilacs and roses?
He's got a greenhouse. I didn't know Norman had a green thumb. Like, can he even tell a lilac versus a daisy?
He had a greenhouse in the last film. Remember Alex fell on the greenhouse roof?
It was a glass roof.
I didn't feel like there's a lot of plants in that greenhouse. Like,
yeah, there was no plants in there.
This one is very actively being used. Like, weekly deliveries. It's very strange.
Again, just forget all that. Like, that's just stupid. That, like, a man that, like, is, like, living on the edge of the world and all of that still gets flower deliveries. Like, he's trying to teach her to be self-sustaining, but he's still going to cough up 120 each week for roses. Like, that's just dumb.
That's the thing. At first, I thought these were supplies getting delivered or he's growing food. But no, it's just he likes flowers.
A survivalist that needs a florist that can't grow his own food, that he feels like he should be much more rural than he is. Yes, this house is not surrounded by other functional households, but it's still within the borders of whatever city he's occupying. Let's call it Detroit. And so, I don't know, if I had stolen a girl and I was such a badass, like I would go live on a farm far, far away and know that she would never be tempted to run away to the city. And certainly not having this florist come in and snoop and pry and ask questions. Like, that's crazy.
If he still had the money that they stole from him in the last film, maybe he would have moved away. But now he's probably just living on his pension.
I thought he did move away. Maybe I figured Detroit's so full of abandoned homes, he just found another home to go live in.
And I know Jane Levy's not here, but do you think that this character did kill Rocky, or did he just let that go? It's been 8 years. He could have either pursued her relentlessly, or more than likely, just said, I'll find my child another way. I'll get a daughter through other means.
I think he let her go. They cut that scene from the end where he was at the train station, so I think they let her go. And you almost have to think that if you're going to go with this movie. Let me just put their thesis out there. After the first movie, after he had Jane Levy in chains and the turkey baster filled with hair and everything else, can you ever root for this man?
Root? No. Well, I don't know. I mean, depending on how biblically minded you are, I mean, all people, all sinners can be forgiven in the eyes of certain gods. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, Jesus forgives. Arnie doesn't.
Here's how I thought this film was going, is that it would repeat something from that first one, that you would have two groups of people going against each other that aren't great. And they do, but I thought it would go different. Oh, the developments of this film. I thought it was going to be, you know, here's the girl's parents, and they do this. Phoenix's parents want to get her back. I thought they were going to have more benevolent reasons to get her back, though. Like,
yes. I thought it was going to be, which shade of gray do you prefer? And I would have liked it better if it was two shades of gray instead of gray and black. But the movie did trick me for about 15 minutes because when Phoenix is in town, we do see a television giving a weather report and conspicuously talking about the organ harvesting ring that's going on. And I'm like, oh, I know this whole plot. They're coming for her organs.
Yeah, and throughout the film, I'm like, okay, no, we're going to find out. Maybe her parents aren't that great, but they love her daughter. That's why they got some mercenaries to try to get her back. I'm like, oh, wait, there was that scene with the organ trafficker. That's going to come up, isn't it? I don't like that. Like, that scene, like, the whole time was on my mind. Oh, that's going to ruin this all. I don't like why they dropped that Easter egg.
Not only that, but, like, this daughter remembers the house. Help me out with ages. You said she's 11 years old?
That's what I read online.
Okay, so 8 years before, she was 3 years old running out of that house?
Yeah, but she looked much older.
She looked older than three, yeah.
You don't really have memories from three or under. Like, she wouldn't remember this house and know where to go. She's created this shrine in the ruins of the house that, I guess, burned but didn't burn all the way down. It's because she insists on going here that they're able to find her, right?
Well, and she's always singing that song that I guess her mom sang her. That's how they know it's her.
Right, yeah. It's a whole lot of coincidence that they just happen to be scoping out the place. She remembers where it is. She's going to sing to this mother and this memory that she has.
And he happens to be there for reasons. He just got out of jail and decided to go see the old burned down meth lab.
No, because he needs her. Like, he's staking it out to find her specifically.
But he's been in jail for 8 years. We jumped 8 years later. Like, this is the first thing he did after getting out of the cell?
Yes.
He just sat around the house in case she came by? Well, I guess there was the shrine. So if he went by and saw the shrine to mom, then it would make a little bit of sense that they would come back.
Someone's coming there. Yeah, like a gravesite. If you hang out long enough, the relative will show up. And he really needs her heart and nobody else's. To hold on to that thought. But yes.
Yeah, I'm biting my tongue.
Yeah, they've told us two big things. That yes, she remembers some things about the past and what happened in that house. And there is an organ harvester going around here. And so, yes, Phoenix, poor little girl, her dream is that she could play with other children. Let's be kind. She just wants to play with other kids. The only kids she sees are at the Covenant shelter. We have a moment where they're at this really nasty playground and she imagines playing with them.
Yeah, using an electric scooter to like spin the mirror around really fast or something.
That's some smart ideas, though. I thought this was going to go Home Alone.
I thought that was going to come back.
I thought she was going to start using this mechanical knowledge to make traps, yes, in the house with the blind man.
I think you're spilling secrets about part three, but just hold it. But yes, and then she has to go to the bathroom, and then this is where she runs into the man that had been tailing her. And we see Raylan. Yes, well, what we've been alleging is that there was a man that was her father that was arrested that day and has now gotten out of jail, and it's for reasons guarded at this moment, very important that he gets his daughter back. He doesn't look like a responsible parent. You might think, and I did certainly for much of the movie, why would he care so much that his daughter is missing? Why would he want her specifically back so much if he was living the drug addicted life that didn't seem to match up? But they will give us a reason.
But we don't know it's the father for a very long time. At this point, you see this guy that's being creepy in the ladies' room, and Phoenix has to call the dog. You don't know this is the father. I didn't know this was the father. I figured it out before the movie told me, but at this point, I'm like, well, we had a shot of the organ harvesting ring. I'm supposed to think this is a guy who's stealing little girls to harvest their innards and sell on the black market. And I didn't know why they were so fixated on her, but judging on previous movies I've seen with organ harvesters, we need a specific thing. We're going to get a big score if we can get a kid liver or something. So I thought they were after that girl.
And it took me a big second. I'm like, I know that dude. Where do I know that dude? That voice is familiar.
Tell me it's Empire Records. Please tell me Empire Records.
No, Wiener Dog. He was the bully in Welcome to the Dollhouse.
Oh,
like, okay. You knew that kid was going to grow up bad. It's no surprise to find out he's still a predator of young girls here. But yes, that charming dark comedy. 30 years ago, I saw this guy. He's still working here.
Yeah, I only know him as Warren, the CD thief from Empire Records.
I don't even remember that movie.
You don't watch it every year on Rex Manning Day? I do.
I watched it once and that was enough.
Agreed.
Oh, it's a great movie. But yes, it was fun to see Warren all grown up.
The one thing I thought was going on, like, I'm like, why does this florist Hernandez want to take this little girl so bad? I thought they were in cahoots. When she looks at Rayland, something transpires between them. I guess it's just suspicion, but I took it to mean that, like, she was in on it. We would find out that she was passing the little girl off to him and was part of the ring. Otherwise, why do they have her in this story?
Yeah, it did play like that to me for a second, Stuart. Like, oh, is she in on this too? Like, I don't know, if you see a little girl walk out of a restroom and then a full-grown adult, like, male, walk out behind her, like, I don't know, I'd be a little bit more forceful about what was going on.
Mm-hmm. And there's something about, like, oh, she looked in the back of his pickup and there's a cooler there. They're setting things up for the break-in that night. Again, I assume that she's going to be one of them, that she's been, like, grooming the girl. I found this girl. Now here's my boyfriend and he's going to be the one to do the dirty work and all. No, I think Hernandez is here basically because they realize they need a kill early on. It will be quite some time before we get to, you know, people dying. And so she just becomes the early victim of this gang. When they come that evening, she's dropped off the kid. She's done all she can to guilt Blind Man into letting his daughter have more of a life. But she's basically here to die.
I couldn't figure her out. I don't know why you would have this florist / grocery delivery person. Her role doesn't make sense. It would make more sense to have, like, a care worker who would be bringing the groceries out or something.
Why wouldn't he live off the land? Groceries don't even make sense. Why wouldn't he have no one involved in his life, particularly, like, a stranger who's going to grab this kid and take her away for hours at a time? That is not making any sense.
He should have rows of corn, a few sheep and pigs to use as meat. Like, yes, I thought, again, when Hernandez was first introduced, I thought she was bringing supplies that he would grow, not pixies and lilacs and all that.
And he's blind. I mean, I hate to just be this blunt, but, like, he can't even appreciate the beauty of the flowers. So it just makes no damn sense.
Hey, those olfactory senses are really heightened at this point. Like, wow.
I guess.
Also, though, just because he's blind, he wasn't born blind. He had a wife. He had a daughter. Maybe one of them loved flowers. Maybe he does it to honor them.
I'm sure we'll get some backstory here where that will be explained, right? Like,
yeah.
But when we see the pickup truck with the cooler in the back, I was like, aha, they are the Oregon people. Look at it. They've got a Playmate cooler. Of course they're doing it. But then I got inside my own head and went, wait. What if this is all a joke? What if that news article about the Oregon harvesting has nothing to do with this movie? What if that's just random?
That would be weird.
I was so hoping that, Arnie, because every time I thought where I knew this film was going, I'm like, oh, wait, there's that organ harvester. I don't want that. No, that's ruining it. Like, I was trying to forget that moment.
I wrote it out of my head. I'm like, wait, this is a birth parent coming. There's no organ harvesting going on.
Exactly. I'm glad I wasn't the only one in denial.
Yeah, no, I really thought that would be clever. Because, as I've said on the show many times, anything in a movie matters. Like, if somebody coughs, you know that person's dead two scenes later, because there's just no random coughs or sneezes in a movie. Everything has a point. And so to have such an obvious talking about organ harvest criminals, it makes you think that's going to be part of the film. I'm like, wouldn't that be really amazing if it had nothing to do with the film and they're just fucking with us? I would love a movie to fuck with audience expectation that way.
Be that as it may, that's not this movie.
Yeah, that is not for the greatest sequel ever written.
Yeah. I think we know. I didn't spend a lot of time, I'll be honest, I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about harvesting her organs or whether he was the parent or not. But it just, she was targeted is the important thing. She is super important to this guy, and she's already kind of unhappy at this house. So, yeah, that's going to create its own kind of tension. Could she be lured away? No, she will have to be forcibly taken. This is going to be the first of two big break-in scenes. We will get to quote-unquote fun stuff of the original pretty quickly after Hernandez gets something in the head.
Yeah, she dies for some reason.
I think it was a hammer drilled in her head. You know, I guess the other thing that she does is supply a whole lot of guns, because despite the fact that she is a florist, she's also a war veteran, which means that her delivery van is filled to the gills with weapons.
Maybe he did move and he's living in Texas. No, actually, I saw the weather report. The highs are in the 60s that day. So again, I was back at Detroit.
And when she runs into these mercenaries, I mean, she identifies them as vets. So I thought we're going to find out, like, whatever these two groups, Norman and this other group, like, maybe it goes something back to the war and some conflict that happened there. Like, what's the backstory?
Bing, bing, bing. If we are going to follow Norman, first of all, people need to start calling him Norman. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep calling him Blind Man because he's not humanized in any way. But yes, it's time to humanize this guy. What did he go through? What was his war experience? Hernandez says, you know, like, that's the root of his problem. Let's go there. But this movie, I think because it wants to do what the original did and say, ah, fuck all characterization, we want to just get to it. And I think we all appreciated the movie for just saying B picture and jumping right in. I don't know if you can be that sloppy now. You know, I feel like Alex was a very relatable and likable person that we could follow quickly into a bad scenario. And Blind Man,
I mean, we understood Rocky's situation, wanting to help her sister. There were sympathies in those faint backstories they gave their characters.
Blind Man needed more help being sympathetic. Like, the fact that all of a sudden people are trying to take his fake daughter away, I don't think anybody is really going to protest that, right?
Well, I started thinking, what if you hadn't seen the first movie? What if you heard good things about the first movie and came into this one? Would you have any reason? You kind of asked this question about the first movie, Stuart. What you see is a blind vet living alone, working hard, a single father raising a daughter. Why wouldn't you instantly be on his side?
Right. But I don't think there'll be too many people in that category. I mean, it is even called Don't Breathe 2. Like, you know that there was a whole other thing that you are supposed to know about in order to be here. And they're playing off of it. So I guess let me try and put on that magical hat. If I were watching this, I would think that man did have dark secrets. I would not think he's a wholesome dad. He is giving guns to his children and keeping them protected. And when they say, I don't want to be homeschooled anymore, I want to go play at the Covenant House, he's like, nope, that's it. You're never going to the city again. I wouldn't like the guy, even if I hadn't seen the first film.
Well, they, like you say, they get into it pretty quick. And I'm thinking, this is very similar to the last movie. We have three people breaking into the house. We had two in the truck that blocked Hernandez from driving off, and then the one who was in the back of Hernandez's truck who hit her with the hammer. So you've got three people breaking into the house with the blind man in there again.
And just want to point out, none of them are Raylan. So the guy from the bathroom is not these guys breaking in.
No, it took me a little while to figure that out. I just assumed he was one of them. And when I started counting the people, I'm like, wait, two blondes and a brunette? And the brunette is not Raylan? Who are these people? So it did take me a bit to catch up on that. But what hit me is these three breaking into the blind man's house, I'm totally against them. They just murdered Hernandez, and Hernandez didn't do anything to deserve it. Whereas, like you pointed out, Jacob, in the first movie, there were reasons to be sympathetic to Alex and to Rocky. Maybe not so much money, but Alex and Rocky.
Yeah, it does feel like they're trying to stack the deck because they know they're going to ask the audience to make a big leap with their allegiances here, I think. So, like, yeah, let's show these three guys being as nasty as possible, killing Hernandez for I don't know what reason.
Okay, you're helping me understand Hernandez now. You're right, because otherwise, we just wouldn't think it's so tragic that this daughter was being taken away from Blind Man. So we need to believe that they're worse than Blind Man. They killed a dog, too. They could have skipped Hernandez and just said they killed Shadow. I think that's enough.
Yeah, that would have told you everything.
Yeah.
You killed the dog, you're bad.
Although it's strange, like, the blind man goes out and is like, the dog hasn't eaten the food, but, like, the murder only happened seconds ago. So I don't know why the dog wasn't eating its food.
The murder of Hernandez only happened a second ago, but we don't know what happened before that. I mean, the girl had been back for a while, and yeah, I don't know when the dog was killed. It didn't look too recent. The dog wasn't...
It was at night. I mean, I'll put it that. It had happened in the evening, and for reasons, Blind Man thinks it's strange the dog has not eaten its food, that it hasn't been there since he put it down, I guess. And so he goes looking for it, and eventually will find it, will start his weeping that he does throughout this movie, and extract the bullet. He wants to find out the caliber so that he knows the enemy that's invading his home.
And I like this home invasion stuff. Specifically, I like the camera work that goes on again. We get another amount of long takes as we watch Phoenix hiding in the house, hiding under bureaus and hiding under beds and hanging off railings and things. I thought this was really well done, and it is the same cinematographer as the last film. It is Pedro Luque. So I thought this film had a great look to it.
Yeah, it feels like a very gritty Home Alone with this child running around, hanging from banisters. My question was, though, like, again, trying to figure out who Norman is. Norman Nordstrom. You have this child, you've wanted to replace your daughter for years, a decade at least. You finally got one, you're teaching her how to be a survivalist, how to run and hide, use gun. Like, there's no safe room in the basement of this house. Like, I thought there would just be a safe room she runs to and hides in. Like, that feels like what you do.
Well, it's a safety box.
There is. It's not a room. It's a box. But I thought that was actually pretty clever. Phoenix does get into that quote-unquote safe box in the basement, and they can't move it. It's really heavy. I'm like, that's not a bad idea to have a box there. And now that I realize this isn't his daughter, it's good to have a box where you could keep people out. The fact that they decide to fill it with water, I guess the next time he builds a safe box, he'll put holes in the bottom just in case.
Yeah, why not a room? Like, it's a really big house.
Yeah, that's what I was said. You gotta have a whole safe room.
Yeah, like the fact that, like, ultimately it just becomes a cage in which she's trapped as water is filling up in there. It makes it feel like a really bad idea, basically.
But they have to do double jeopardy, because when the blind man comes down, oh, it's not filling with water fast enough. Let me take the power cord to this lamp and put it in there so I can electrocute her or drown her. Double ways to die. I thought for sure we were going to see that she did learn some survivalist skills, though. I thought she was going to fashion some kind of reed breather that she could stick through the pipes or something.
Well, she keeps diving down to, like, the bottom, and Norman, I get why you failed her for survival. Not good at it.
Yeah, I don't know why she's hiding in the water. I would want to be breathing.
But Norman is able to use that power cord to trigger a hell of an explosion and then dump that over. I thought he was just going to dump the water out, but he knocks it over, then gets the doors out. No CPR needed. She did survive, barely.
But it was interesting that he could open it up without a key or anything, which just leads me to believe not a safe place.
I thought the door was on the bottom. Like, he knocked it over and revealed a secret door that didn't need a key. It didn't make much sense to me. I'd have to watch it again to really get that.
It takes her a long time to get there. I figure safe room, that's something, you know, we watched Panic Room. You get there real quick. Lock the door.
She's not very obedient. She keeps failing survival training.
Yeah, we had seen this earlier. The camera tried to establish in the same way it established the hammer last time. It established there was this strange red box in the basement, and what could that be? It's a tease. Like, we're not to know right away, but this is what she's been trained to do when all else fails. I think she thinks early on she needs to protect her dad. And, you know, I don't exactly know why she's not running out the front door screaming for him. Like, I feel like if she got him involved earlier, instead of hiding in the shadows, this would all be over rather quickly. He is a superhero, after all. He's Daredevil. He could, like, with the hearing that he has, he could take him out within seconds.
But no, she has to hide. It's a fun game of cat and mouse, and I'm thinking, I wish there was more to these people who broke into the house, but I'm having a good time watching, again, a girl hide from theoretical killers or kidnappers in this house with the camera work. I mean, while we wait to see if the blind man gets back in time to save her.
And, I mean, he's going to show up, and I do feel like because they have made these invaders so bad, like, we're not supposed to sympathize with them at all, we could have a bit more fun with the gratuitous violence and, like, a great shot of the blind man, like, reaching through the window and grabbing the one guy. And, like, I do feel like they've upped their game there because they've concocted a story where it could be more violent and we're not going to question the blind man as much.
I'm going to say that this doesn't have the same kind of fun. You're right. It's the same camera work. It should feel the same, but we do have a different director at the helm of it, and I'm not sure how much that factors into it. But I also just think there's an overwhelming, like, cloud of, like, gross in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I just, maybe it was true with the last movie. Again, particularly if you didn't think Rocky was a altruistic character, if she was using Alex. It had Alex. There was always the one that felt like the innocent. And in this movie, that is Phoenix. I'm supposed to like Phoenix, even if I don't like anybody else. And I just haven't really connected to her. I'm not exactly sure why, but I don't. This is going to sound awful, but I don't really care whether she lives or dies. She feels very much like a device, a MacGuffin. And I'm not moved by the threats against her.
I'll agree with you there, Stuart, because I am recognizing, like you did, Arnie, that the cinematography is still on par. The violence is still there, if that's why you want to see this. But yeah, it doesn't have that thriller aspect. That other one, like, you know, we're crawling around this house and trying to be quiet, and then someone pops out. Like, this, there's no reason to be quiet. Breathe all you want. Like, we know who you're trying to kill.
Yeah, scream. Yeah, she should be screaming bloody murder to get the blind man back in the house. And yeah.
But who knows how far away he is. And if she screams, then everybody in the house is going to know she's there. And I'll agree that Phoenix isn't the most well-rounded of characters. I like Madeline Grace's performance here, and I am rooting for Phoenix to avoid these people.
Yeah, I don't want any child abducted, but I agree with you, Stuart. Like, it's not like this great performance where I'm like, wow, this is a real revelation of this child actress. I want her to really win in this film.
I'm finding a heavy ambivalence is what I'm finding. Yeah. I'm finding I don't care what happens because it's all just kind of gross and unpleasant. And then now we're seeing Blind Man fight back. It feels and looks very different than it did in the first movie. In the first movie, you go, oh shit, he's going to find them. He's scary. He has become Liam Neeson now. We are to want him to rescue his daughter. And so we're to be cheering when he super glues the nostrils and mouth closed of Jared.
Yeah, this was another moment of me thinking, we see Jared go into the garage and he steps in something sticky. And I'm like, okay, well, that never happens for no reason. What did he step in? How's it going to play into it?
We saw the blind man super gluing a wound shut earlier, too.
Yeah, he got stabbed. So, like, they got him a good one in the kitchen.
Yeah, but I thought this was definitely foretelling this guy's death. I did not expect to see his mouth and nose epoxied shut. That seems like too much trouble. Just kill him.
And we're going to see another guy have to come and puncture his cheek so he could breathe. And
why not just cut the lips open? Didn't you think he was going to cut the lips open? He's like, open your jaw. And so I'm like, okay, you're opening the jaw so you can cut the lips open.
Because it's super gross. And I guess that's what they thought people wanted out of Don't Breathe. Like, again, mine was sneaking around the house and all the gray allegiances going on there. Like, that was the fun of that one. You don't really agree with anyone, but like, this one, it's violent. Like, if that's what you liked about the first one, this is more violent. So I guess greatest sequel ever written.
The first one had the dynamic of we could get out of here, but there's the money. And what does that mean? And watching how money corrupted the characters as they got in further and further over their heads was its own kind of thrill. Here, like, yeah, some bad people want this girl who's currently under possession of another bad person. Like, I'm not rooting for anyone, really.
I'm rooting for the blind man because it's a little girl. And in a way, you have to realize the blind man has a similar conundrum. There's strangers going after the little girl. He could call the cops. Nobody disabled his phones. We never even think about a telephone. Why doesn't he call the cops?
Does he have a phone? I don't remember seeing one.
He doesn't call the cops because if he calls the cops, he's going to be caught and they're going to take his daughter away from him. So there is your conundrum.
Right, I guess.
I wish they spelled it out more.
He needs to contemplate that at some point then.
I don't feel like that's what we're doing with him. I feel like with him, we're reveling in the idea that he's evil Batman. And he's swooping in when you least expect it and super gluing mouths and going to the basement for big fights with fire and, you know, leaking gas hoses and what have you.
They did frame a shot of this like a superhero movie. When he's in that basement and he's going up against whoever the guy is down there, I can't keep all these gangster names straight.
That would be Duke.
There is just a shot of Norman and Duke where they're on each side of the screen, heavy up angle. It's a gray film. It made me think Zack Snyder would have totally put that shot in Batman v Superman with Batman on one side and Superman on the other. I'm like, it really did feel like these are two titans about to go to war.
my problem is I'm cracking up at some of this dialogue. Like, and then they realize, oh, he's a Navy SEAL. Like, those are the toughest of the tough. And then one of the guys is like, a fucking dead SEAL, bro. There's a lot of bro talk in this, and it just cracked me up every time.
That's not what you say. You talk about clubbing a SEAL. You don't just say dead SEAL. No, you club SEALs.
You wanted some puns.
But are you enjoying this? Like, Arnie, it sounds like you're saying, for the most part, you're satisfied with what's happening down here.
I'm realizing it's lesser, but I'm not hating it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's fair enough. I think the lesser part is louder than the... I mean, at this point, we're 30 minutes in, and yeah, I'm feeling like I didn't sign up for this. This isn't the kind of movie I wanted to watch. Like, it's suddenly becoming Taken or Death Wish 6, and I wanted a thriller. I wanted a home invasion thing, and it's now becoming watch a blind guy fool you into thinking that he's weak when in fact he can fuck with you in all kinds of ways. And I just naturally I'm not attracted to that.
And just to let people know where I'm at, if you don't know, after 1200 episodes of Now Playing, I've been spending my latest time during COVID to Delta Boogaloo catching up on the films of Liam Neeson and Nicolas Cage.
Ooh, why? Why do you hate yourself?
And Jason Statham. I just kind of, you know, when I want to just maybe multitask a little bit, a silly revenge flick about an ice trucker or about a father whose son was dealing drugs is going to fill the time and entertain me. So I'm all four. I mean, some of those are really bad. Do not watch the Liam Neeson Ice Trucker movie. No. But some of them are entertaining enough to pass the time and get, you know, it's a stream of weak recommends or weak not recommends going.
Yeah, and I don't want to watch that series that you've been watching, Arnie. Like, I realize I'm still into the film because we're only a half hour into it. And I'm like, okay, it could turn it around. But always in the back of my mind is that organ trafficker. I'm like, I don't want that storyline to come up. Like, I sense bad things with it. But I'm still willing to give the movie a shot at this point.
I was completely convinced it would never come back. I was like so happy. I was ready to compliment it on the show. Can you believe they did that to us?
I wasn't thinking about it. I can honestly say I figured most of the movie was going to be, oh, she's in the box, but, you know, the big dude is filling the box with water and, you know, like all of this cat and mouse stuff, which, again, really worked for the movie last time. Like, it was great that the movie did that so well.
Agreed.
Here, it all comes to a head when Raylan finally does arrive, pulling up in his pickup, the one that we saw with the possibly organ donation ice box in the back, and a dog as well. He's got his own dog to replace Shadow. And he takes off his hat and says, and this one's really confusing to me.
I don't get this.
Yeah, like I have gray hair and you have gray hair, so you must be my child.
I think there's more to it, but that's how you convince a child is, hey, look, we both have streaks in our hair.
Is that a thing? Like, other than Rogue, I know of no child that has ever had streaky Bride of Frankenstein hair.
There was a woman I know.
Okay.
Who not only had a blonde streak in brown hair, but one of her eyebrows was blonde and the other was brown, which made it constantly look like she was missing an eyebrow.
Okay, yeah, but that's a grown woman you're talking about.
And her child had a streak of blonde in his dark hair, too. And he was...
11?
3.
Wow. Okay. All right. So, I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm saying it's weird.
Now, I later found out this is often a sign of inbreeding, but that is the case of a woman I know.
All I'm saying is DNA test. That's probably a better source of if it's your child or not, not the color of the streak in their hair. Or just sing the song. Like, that seems like to be the key identifier is this song. Like, just make it about that song.
I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying it's weird and distracting. And suddenly I'm thinking about gray hair on children when they're trying to just establish the fact that, you know, Raylan's making the point, you thought you were with your father, I'm your father now. That usually is a powerful moment, but this is no Empire Strikes Back, and I feel like it doesn't land.
It's better than the Empire Strikes Back because it's the greatest sequel ever written.
No, it was the best idea for a sequel that had ever been pitched to Raimi.
Oh, okay, best idea.
That is much smaller in scope.
Pitch to Raimi. Okay, yeah, so okay. It's got to be pitch to Raimi to be the greatest.
He probably gets a lot of shitty ideas thrown at him.
So I'm still liking this because now all of a sudden, the people who've broken in, I think, again, the movie's fucking with me. It's fucking with my expectations. But I did suspect this before it's revealed, but I'm like, wait a second. We're to think that all these people are evil organ harvesters breaking in. But what a twist is an M. Night type twist. These aren't the bad guys. These are actually the good guys. And now we're having the twist of the film where the blind man will become the bad guy because we're going to find out that this girl was kidnapped or abducted or taken. We knew it wasn't his. And so now he's going to become the villain like he did the last time because all these people who broke in, despite being strangely nefarious and feeling dangerous, they're all there to protect the child.
I wasn't even thinking of good and bad. Again, it's all about the grays with this story. And so, yeah, I thought maybe the dad, maybe he is a drug dealer or a drug addict or something and found some money to hire some mercenaries to get his daughter back because he wants his daughter back. It's his daughter. Like, and there's the grayness for you. That's all I needed. I didn't need good and bad. Just here's a dad. Maybe he's not a great guy. Maybe he's hired some not great guys, but there's the conflict.
But it makes no sense for a guy who... All right, yeah, he's been in prison, but he'd have to love his daughter a whole lot to go to this trouble, to scope out the old house, to get the posse together, to break in this way.
Wouldn't you do this for your daughter, though? I mean, I think that that's just a given.
Does this look like a responsible parent to you? He was running a meth lab? Like, he's talking about, like, I was creating this meth lab and it burned the house down. Like, well, then, you know, DFC will take your kids away anyway. Like, you were never going to have them. The state will make sure they go to a foster care. Like,
but Stuart, if I had not seen that little segment, if I had walked out to go get some popcorn when that organ trafficker popped up on the screen, I would have thought, okay, yeah, bad dad that loves his child. Like, sure, he burned the house down with a meth kitchen, but he still loves her and he's going through these weird means to get her back.
Yeah, he spent 8 years in prison. Theoretically, he's rehabilitated now, right? I thought he wanted to reconnect and have a solid life now.
Killing dogs and Hernandez and no.
Well, the Hernandez part did not make sense. Yeah. No. And the problem was, again, that organ trafficker is always in the back of my mind. I feel like we need some kidneys or something. That's what it's coming to.
I like what you're saying, Arnie. Like, wouldn't it be something if this wasn't a bad person, but someone that was like, oh my God, I found my daughter after looking all of this time. Didn't have to have it hinge on a meth lab explosion. Just that she was abducted by blind man. What would it mean to see this battle? I don't know. Maybe slightly more interesting, but not a lot.
I just thought it was a great way to toy with audience expectation.
My expectation is, how much longer is this going on? Like, at this point, it's clock watching, and like, I don't want to watch this. Like, I can tell you, completely checked out. Not even talking about the craft of this movie. It's probably some of the cat and mouse bits are as good as anything that was done last time, but I don't care. Like, Raylan's like, I'm tired of these silly games. I'm like, yes, let's do something else because this is boring.
Yeah, when they get the blind man and Raylan gets his daughter and they're like going to kill the blind man, but oh, you can't kill him in front of the daughter. We'll walk the daughter out and just shoot the guy. But instead, they got to pick up this Navy SEAL that obviously has some kind of superhero abilities. Like, he's been kicking your guys' ass while he's blind. Like, just shoot the guy. Like, at this point, I'm like, done. I'm like, okay, you're just going to go to stupid plot conveniences now.
All right, I'm very much still with this film. I'm enjoying some of the twists with this. And yeah, they're going to kill the blind man. I know that's not going to happen. But what really gets me is I'm thinking, okay, this father is the good guy. He's got his daughter back. I guess I'd forgotten about Hernandez.
You really thought he was a good person. Like, I mean, there's no way to characterize this as a concerned parent. Like, he is admitting jail and meth lab and has killed animals and human beings.
I was wondering which way the movie was going to take it. Who am I to root for? But then as they want to kill the blind man,
mm-hmm.
They send in the dog to kill the blind man, and he won't hurt the dog. He puts the gun up to the dog's face, won't shoot the dog. And I'm like, okay, we know Raylan killed a dog, but we're seeing the blind man won't kill a dog, and by the save the cat rules of filmmaking, that means the blind man's the good guy. But the blind man kidnapped the girl. And then they're going to burn the house down and somebody's going to say to Raylan, your dog's in there. And he's not going to care. Whereas the blind man's going to make sure the dog gets out. So we're supposed to root for the blind man, right? The blind man's the good guy because he saved the dog. That's film shorthand. But wait, the blind man kidnapped a girl. So again, my allegiances are torn and I'm trying to decide who the movie's going to side with, but I can't think that the movie will actually side with the dog killer.
Well, and as soon as Raylan gets away with Phoenix, I'm like, oh, he's got to keep the dog alive because that's what's going to lead him back to them. There's the twist for this sequel, is that the blind man's going to have to invade someone's home. Like, I'm seeing it all. So it's not even like he's a good guy because he let the dog live. Like, that's a necessity because that's how he's going to find his adopted daughter.
But it's worth pointing out that cooler in the back of the van had Molotov cocktails. It was not filled with organs or surgical gear or any of that. It is simply used to burn down the house. So, again, I wasn't really thinking about that subplot. They showed in that TV spot the actual picture of the surgeon that is wanted for these organ trafficking crimes. It hasn't been any of these people. So that hasn't been my thought, that they're taking the girl to harvest her organs. It's more like I'm expected to believe that I just want my daughter back, even though I've been in jail for 8 years and was running a meth lab.
You got to know, though, there's something up. I mean, I get that she wouldn't necessarily just want to go with this strange man, but that they had chloroform on hand to take her.
All right, let's just jump to it. So, yes.
Yeah, can we get to the stupid part?
Yeah. All right. So his house is burned down and we're going to leave blind man in the ashes of his family life that may or may not be sad for you, depending on how you felt about his relationship with Phoenix. But Phoenix is going to meet her real family and, yeah, eek, out of frying pan into fire.
Yeah, she's going to meet that mom who's in a wheelchair because she has a heart condition from the meth lab fire.
And she has blood poisoning, too?
I guess all from that meth fire.
Yeah. Can we just admit that this organ farmer is selling them a bad bag of goods? He saw some drug addicts and said, oh, yes, I can totally save you. Just give me all of this money.
Yeah. Let's put an 11-year-old heart in an adult. I don't know if that works. Maybe. I'm not a doctor.
Yes. I really need to drill in on that.
I looked this up. I had to know. And you can put a child heart or an adult heart in the child if the size is correct. I doubt very greatly an 11-year-old heart is big enough to connect to all of the arteries and things is what looks like a 35-year-old woman.
I mean, they're totally different sizes. I mean, you can just tell, like, standing next to each other, there's no way that the hearts will be comparable. But even so, like, it only can be from my family member, and that's why we needed to find the daughter. And I've been managing to live for 8 years, but now I'm about to croak? Oh, boy.
That's not even the problem. The whole motivation, they need this woman to live because yes, she's the one that cooks the meth.
Right.
And she apparently is the only one. She's a woman, so I guess she belongs in the kitchen cooking meth. Like, no, just teach your husband how to do it before you die. If, like, I don't understand this.
No.
There's a lot of onlys, a lot of narrow-sightedness. It doesn't have to be a family member, but you have to have a compatible heart donor. And the only way they knew to get one was the daughter. And the only meth cook they know is this woman. And
yeah, that's the problem.
I mean, this was a whole plot in Breaking Bad. Like, this dude made the best meth, but that's because he was a chemist. He could make the best that no one could figure out. I don't think these meth cooks are making pure meth like in Breaking Bad.
If they were any good at their job, it wouldn't have exploded.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just really ridiculous that she's the best meth cook in Detroit, and we can't let her die of the heartburns.
I'm going to be like Trump. I prefer meth cooks who don't blow up.
It's just so sad. Like, you're telling me that these criminal people, there's all these thugs hanging around and, like, none of them know any other meth cooks. Like, this is it.
Does Detroit only have one source of meth?
And they've been getting by on the profits from 8 years ago? Like, because she hasn't been cooking since? Or is she still cooking, but, like, it's harder for her in the wheelchair?
She's been cooking the whole 8 years. And when Phoenix is looking around and seeing equipment, I thought she was seeing meth lab equipment. So if you were to think, oh, they had a meth problem, but then after the fire, they got done with it and were fine now. No, I thought she was still cooking meth. But then later we're going to see surgical equipment. So I couldn't tell if this was the meth lab and surgical suite.
I don't know what this place is. I agree. It's everything.
I think it's a hotel. It's got a bar and an aquarium and all that. It looks to me like it was a hotel once that is now gone to seed.
Like, it's going to have some platforms in the middle of the room that you could just push people off and kill them. Like, none of it makes sense to me.
No, it had an emptied pool. I don't think there were any platforms.
Oh, okay.
But there is an old man walking around. I thought for sure that was going to be Phoenix's grandfather.
That's Thomas Hanneman. That's who they featured in the news report of the organ trafficker.
Yeah.
That's when we're to make the connection of, oh, we see him first.
I made that connection long ago and had been dreading it. And yeah.
You guys were sharper than I was because I didn't hang on to the organ line the way you guys did. But he was like, okay, that's how it's coming back in. And so he's here. But I'm like, this still doesn't make any sense. And then when they even spell it out, I'm like, but that don't make no sense that you want a 12-year-old's heart because yours is burnt from a meth lab.
Sam, this is where you ask for the rewrites. Like, this is all bad. Like, if I was ambivalent before, now I'm, like, repulsed by this film. It's not because a rapist is the hero. It's because this is stupid.
Yeah, it is gross, right? Yeah, it's gross and stupid. And you feel like I've accepted stupid before, like when it's kind of fun to go like completely dark. Like you can get to a sort of splatter film that like, okay, that would never logically happen, but let's go there because this is just, you know, the walls are caked with excrement and we're just doing that. But this just feels unpleasant. Like I don't want to be here. I don't want to spend time with these characters. It's just ick.
I'm still okay with this movie. I'm like, okay, now we have defined bad guys. I guess we're supposed to just forget all the bad things the blind man did in the first one, and we'll roll with it. He's got to be the hero. He's got to come and save this girl. It's a stupid, stupid plot development, but it's straightforward. And the question for me is the action entertaining? And is the camera work fun? And so far, both have been the case. And we do get the quote-unquote emotional crisis of conscience in one of the goons who's like, you're killing a little girl. This isn't right.
Not one of the goons. That's a carryover. That is Raul. If you remember the fence from the first, he only had one scene. He was in the van.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the same character. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Same actor, same name. He was the one that tipped them off about the blind man's house to begin with.
You would have thought he would have known of like the danger that they were getting into then. He saw what happened to the last three people he sent there. Again, give me some backstory. Give me some acknowledgement that these characters know what happened before. There's some kind of history. Like, there's a two at the end of this title, but they're not treating it like it's a sequel. It's like, oh, here's an adventure to go on.
Well, here's the thing that's interesting. I mean, the one part that I'm going to give it that is like typically in lots of vigilante movies, we have a bad character. You know, they've come out of prison. They've had an unspecified dark past, and we see their redemption by killing even worse people. And we find ways to root for those bad guys because they're able to use their bad mojo for good. And we accept that. But we don't ever have to think about their crimes. What's interesting about this movie is we cannot erase what Blind Man did in the first one. And so the gambit is, can someone like that be redeemed? You're so willing to do that for other popcorn movies. Are you going to do it for this guy?
The movie's going to walk a line on that. Like, he thinks he is not redeemable himself. So there is that. And I'm ending up rooting for Phoenix more than anybody. The whole point is to get Phoenix out of there. And in fact, what I assume, I had, again, two thoughts. I was thinking ahead of this movie. I'm like, okay, so the blind man's going to come and try to rescue Phoenix. We're not going to have a movie where Phoenix's heart gets transplanted into a meth head. I mean, that's not going to happen. That's the stakes. That's not going to be the end of the movie, unless this is a very different movie than I expect it to be. My question is, will the blind man pay for his sins with his life? Is it going to be he will die so Phoenix will live? And I think that makes sense. To me, that's a clean ending for the movie and a way to get around the moral conundrums about all the things he did because he traded his life for the life of this young, innocent girl. But part of my head is like, I'm sure they want Don't Breathe 3, though. You can't kill him and want Don't Breathe 3.
That's what I was going to say. Do you really believe they're going to kill this anti-villain or anti-hero, whatever you want to call him? Like, he is the face of the franchise now, so there's no way they're going to kill him. They might try to fake us out and say he's dead, but I never believed he was going to die.
Nah, but let's even table that. Like, let's not worry about whether we're going to continue to follow this character. Maybe that is what's going to happen. I guess I'm saying, isn't this John Rambo? Didn't John Rambo do terrible things in Vietnam that we just never saw?
He didn't commit war crimes.
Are we sure of that?
I mean, you've never seen the first one. The first one's the real Rambo film, where they really delve into what happened in Vietnam and how he was betrayed by the government, and now it's happening it all over again when he comes home. Like, yeah, I don't think he was ever accused of committing war crimes. He's in prison in the second one because of what he did in the first one in the USA.
I don't know. Like, what would be helpful to know? I mean, again, I thought it would be an easy, obvious thing. We would go back to the battlefield. We would see when he finds Hernandez's van and straps on, and we get the Rambo montage. We would see what it was like when he had eyes. I thought we would see how he lost his sight and why he went blind. Like, I can't believe they didn't give us that.
I don't even know if he went blind from the war. Like, I know he's a war vet.
He did. It was said last time it was a grenade. A grenade went off and took his sight.
It's so dumb how he finds Hernandez, too. Like, she's got dog tags tinkling on her rearview mirror, and because he always recognized that as her sound when she arrived. Again, the idea that he has this almost like bat hearing or something like that, and he can follow that several city blocks to her van. I mean, this is dumb, right? This is a very stupid movie. The first movie was kind of dumb, but you could turn off your brain.
The first movie was a B movie that had some great thrills in it.
You could turn off your brain and go with it, but this is like, you just want to turn it off. This is not good.
No, not at all. I'm having fun with it, and I'm looking forward to seeing the blind man.
Fun. That is not a word. That is not a word that can be used with this movie. This movie is the opposite of fun. It is icky.
Why? Why can you not just enjoy the...
Because fun is a good time, and this movie is icky.
I'm having a good time with this movie.
How can you have fun with, like, these kind of gross... Well, you know what? I'm going to stop myself, because you like Rob Zombie movies.
Yes.
I find those people completely repulsive, and I never want to spend time in a movie with those characters. What is fun about watching organ traffickers being predators on children? Like, this is just yuck.
What's fun is you know that they're going to die for it. It's just... setting them up to knock them down.
That's just grosser. Again, even ickier that we have to create these monsters so that we can feel good about killing these monsters.
That's called every action movie ever, Stuart. I mean...
No, it's not.
Not every action movie has human trafficking to put an 11-year-old heart into a grown woman so she can continue to cook meth. That's so stupid.
Yeah.
Yes, it is dumb, but it's not gross. It's not repugnant. It's not...
It is totally gross. It is completely repugnant.
I will side with you, Arnie, that I don't find it completely repugnant. I just find it so stupid. It's lost me. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, we've seen so much worse in films. I can't believe this is the line for you, Stuart.
It's not the line. It's just like, I don't find it pleasant. I don't know why you would find that quote unquote fun. There's nothing fun about this environment. Like, fun to me is being nowhere near anything like this.
Fun to me is going to be when the blind man comes in and we get the reversal where he's doing the break-in.
Except, again, that trailer ruined everything if you saw it. Like, the moment of him lying in the water and waiting for the waves to hit him.
I didn't remember a lot about the trailer. I only saw it once, so none of this I knew.
Oh, wow. Like, the two things in the trailer I remembered was that the whole fake-out of the girl being chased by the blind man at the beginning, that got revealed in the trailer, and then this whole ending. Like, oh, I know he's just going to shoot everyone because you already showed me that.
And again, the dog led him here. The dog knew exactly where to go for 15, 20 miles.
I went along with that, telling the dog to go home. That was okay with me.
I have a problem with that because the dog came in a van. Now, dogs that run away are very good at coming home because they can follow their own scent. But a dog can't follow the scent of where he was when he was being driven in a pickup.
And again, he's coming back so he can get revenge on the guy that tried to burn him up in the house.
No, he's coming to get his daughter.
The dog.
Oh, the dog. Yeah, the dog's just going home.
Yeah. The dog's just following a command. The dog's told to go home. The dog has no desire for revenge.
But he's picked a new, like, ally.
Well, because he saved him. Look, it's not great, Stuart. I agree with you. It's silly.
Not great is an understatement. This is, like, incredibly stupid.
It is incredibly stupid in a movie that's had decent action and good cinematography. And so, yeah, I can roll my eyes and yet not want to walk out of the theater.
Okay, I can't. This is just bad after bad, bad idea after bad idea. And I'm wondering, this mythical fun that you're talking about, you're saying I'm supposed to want Blind Man to just fuck all these people up, like cheering, yes. Jumping yes. up and saying yay. Like,
yes.
Yuck.
Yeah, I'm never at that point in this film.
I am.
They didn't camp it up. Like, in order to do that, you'd have to have someone more likable, or you'd have to have it more campy. Like, these are ridiculous, silly, like a dark comedy. If this were a dark comedy, okay, that's funny, that's fun. But this is just icky.
Yeah, what if he was throwing people on the operating table to remove their hearts? Like, give me something like that, at least.
Action revenge films don't have to be funny or fun for me to enjoy them. Go back to some of those Death Wishes I recommend.
Yeah, we are going back to Death Wish.
Yeah, three being the best, which is campy.
Yeah, we are going back to Death Wish, and that is, yeah, just not a genre I want. I don't like it.
I'm ready for some good action of him coming in and being, yes, you said Rambo. This felt very much like a later day Rambo film. He coming in and doing the stealth attacks to, he's completely outnumbered, but he's going to find a way to kill them all.
Yeah, throwing hammers because of the way sound echoes and all of that. Okay. I mean, is it great? Do you call this even good?
Good, yes. The action here is good.
Okay. The fight in the power, the where the power booth is, that's overflowing with water. I mean, it was used in the trailer. Obviously, they feel like it's one of the highlights of the film.
I liked the fight. I thought it was a good fight. Stephen Lang is very physical. I don't really care for the guy as an actor very much. I don't really think he's got any charisma at all to speak of, but he could do these fights, and I thought he did them well. Or his stunt double did, and he doubled him very well. He's always the underdog in these fights. How can you not root for the underdog who's trying to save a child?
I never feel like he's the underdog. He's Daredevil. He is super powered.
He's constantly getting stabbed and slashed. I want to know why, how he keeps going. Like, every fight, he gets cut.
Because he's Daredevil.
Yeah, again, this is why you would conclude this is a bad movie you don't want to watch. I'm curious to know why you're having fun.
The stunts are good, the fights are good, and I want to see Phoenix get rescued. I want to see...
You really do. You care whether this child lives or dies.
Yes, I do.
I cannot say, I really don't. I don't give two Fs about how any of this wraps up.
Yeah, I'm all for Phoenix rising from these ashes.
Just that name that they gave her, Phoenix. Ugh.
I know. Yeah, it's so stupid.
But it is a good name. If you found a child in the fire, why wouldn't you name it Phoenix?
Because it's stupid.
Yeah, because it's obvious and stupid. But so what does she do here? What does she learn? She's handcuffed to her mother. They're rolling her out the back door. And she, what, gets something to cut off her hand so she can escape? After she falls in the pool?
She falls in the pool and is pulling Phoenix down, so she's got to cut off her mom's hand to get freed?
Like, because her dad, like, gave her the merit badge and sawing off limbs, she can do this? Like, I'm trying to even see an arc here.
Well, I think the arc is, and again, I think it's going to go into that growth zone that you don't like, Stuart, is earlier, the blind man was killing someone in front of Phoenix, and she was flipping out, and is like, how could you do this horrible act in front of her? But now Phoenix, she's going to do the horrible act. So, a gross story arc?
Okay, yeah, great that we have a child murderer.
But the woman's already dead. Phoenix isn't killing anyone. Raylan shot Josephine in the chest, and Josephine died, and that's why the wheelchair is going into the pool. But what gets me is Phoenix is so panicked. Oh my God, I'm going to go into this empty pool. Oh my God, I'm going to go into this empty pool. She goes in and nothing happens.
Yeah, well, it's a swimming pool. I mean, that can't be more than 9 feet. Who couldn't fall into that? Like, it's all right. You're going to live.
Yeah, but that was the whole panic was, oh my God, I'm going to fall into this pool.
Yeah, I didn't understand the panic.
I wouldn't want to fall 9 feet, but...
You can drop down. She fucking dangled from a stairwell and crawled down things.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Her death-defying falling into the deep end of the pool. It's like, give me a break.
But does Norman, does he finally get his tagline, like... See what I see as he goes after Rayland and gets revenge on the father.
Well, if so, he's stealing that straight from Jigsaw, though, because that's from most of the Saw movies. See what I see.
Yeah, but Jigsaw wasn't blind, so it makes a little bit more sense here.
Do people like that? Like, I feel like that might have been appealing. We kind of undersold last week all of his, like, anti-God speech. Like, he doesn't speak a lot in that movie.
No.
But he does get, they give him a couple minutes there to really go off on some nihilism. I wonder if it does have the appeal of a Jigsaw. I don't watch Saw movies, so I can't say. But I wonder if there aren't people that would like the character for that reason. Because he's so dark and his belief system is so clouded that there's something, I don't know, appealing about him.
Relatable?
Yeah, relatable is a good word. Maybe, yes, some people would see a kindred spirit there. I don't know.
I like it. I mean, I like that he blinds this guy, but then Raylan doesn't move. So I'm like, did you just kill him with thumbs in the eye? I thought you blinded him. And the blind man's more than content to just forget about him immediately.
Yeah, we have to get to the moment that had been building throughout. And that is Phoenix found out my secret and I didn't want to tell her. And now I'm going to come clean. This is the atonement. This is my dying wish to be forgiven for my sins. I have killed, I have raped, I am nothing but a monster, and you cannot be around me. He is not wanting to bring her back. He is not wanting to find a new house and homeschooling her anymore. He knows that this is over.
But I think this is, you want to talk about an arc. This is more than him being discovered. This is self-discovery. He has realized through the way the biological parents treated Phoenix that he has not been much better. He didn't want to rip her heart out.
Yeah, he's been a lot better than they have. I mean, he wasn't going to murder her for organs.
But he was keeping her basically captive, much like the women he did in the previous movie. So by doing this, he has come to terms with how bad he has been. Now, is this enough? Do you now feel like his moment here is good enough that you want to see him go on movie after movie doing badass things in the name of good? I don't think so. I think that if he dies in this moment, that he has been semi-redeemed.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about, because forget sequels. We're grading this movie. We're not grading a franchise. In this movie, they tell us he is dead, and like needed to die so that, yes, Phoenix can have a semi-normal functioning life.
And it takes something away that if this is supposed to be his confession, his moment of atonement, well, he's dying. Like, it would be much more powerful if he's still fine at the end. He's like, no, you got to get out of here. I'm awful. Go away. Never see me again.
He's not dying yet.
I agree. I think he's still alive, and then Raylan pops up and slashes him somewhere. In the back, maybe?
The liver, it looked like, or the kidney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. So, yes, you're right. There is some feeling that at this moment he could have just swept her away and gone back to the way things were and lied to her, but wanted to come clean.
And this is where Phoenix then chooses which father figure she wants to defend when she picks up a machete and stabs her biological father in the back in almost the exact same place where he stabbed Norman.
And that dad, he's going to fall into that pool right next to the mom. So poetic.
They're almost holding hands. I mean, it's
stupid.
I kind of like the looks of this film and several of its shots. I'm not going to ding it too bad.
And Phoenix, while she's going, her real parents await her at Covenant Shelter. She is wisely realizing none of these people are what I need, but she is not going to call herself Tara. She was told by her biological parent that her name was Tara, and she's going to stick with Phoenix.
I was really hoping when they asked her name, she was going to say Skywalker. But no, I guess she still has allegiance to the blind man. She's still going by Phoenix.
Right. And what does that mean? Does that mean that she is going to retain a sense of this survivalist? Is she going to pick up the franchise? I don't know. Maybe. Did you guys stay through the credits? I was the only one.
Yeah.
Everyone else left.
Yeah, because I only knew this had an after credit scene because you said so, Stuart.
The one other guy in the theater did not stay. I told Marjorie there's an end credit scene. She didn't stay either. So it was me and the guy doing the spray downs of the chairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the dog is still alive, sniffing the blind man's body. He doesn't twitch. He doesn't move.
That's what I wanted to check. He doesn't twitch, right? I mean, if this was on home video, I'd rewind and slow-mo that thing. But as far as I can tell, the finger only moves because the dog licks it. And that makes, you know, just pushes the finger. But there is no independent motion from the blind man, right? There is no indication here he's still alive.
The indication that he's alive is that they went back to the scene and
right.
showed the dog next.
Yes.
To me, that tells me, oh, we're keeping him alive for a part three. If someone could show Sam, I don't know. It's not going to be as good as this, though, because this is the greatest thing he's ever seen for a sequel. But yeah, they want him around if this is successful.
But if you're saying he's alive, you have the fingers twitch or something.
Yeah, they don't want to commit to anything yet.
Yeah, correct. It felt like a non-committal. It felt like, we'll see how profitable this is. This one cost $5 million more than the last one. It's not going to do a fraction of what the original one did.
Is Serbia that much more to shoot in?
You know what? I think the star power of Stephen Lang, he's now a producer of this, and you couldn't have made it without him. You can make it without Jane Levy. I don't think you can make Don't Breathe 2 without the blind man.
Well, the movie is not doing horribly. It's going to make its money back in theaters, a $15 million budget. It's almost made 30 global. It's, when you take into account video, streaming, what have you, this thing is making money for the studio in the end. Is it enough for a third part? Does anybody care enough for a third part? Plus, I feel like everybody is grading box office on a curve. Now, it doesn't mean you're not losing money, but everybody's like, oh, you made $30 million. Good for you. You get a trophy, and you get a trophy, and you get a trophy.
Yeah, they're saying Free Guy's getting a sequel because it made $25 million opening weekend. That's crazy.
Here's the thing. I think it will continue to be more and more expensive because of getting Stephen Lang back. And so can you make it without him would be my question. Could you? I see two other paths here. Phoenix killing child predators, or you could do the look who's talking tack and make it about the dog, you know, which I actually love.
Is the dog going to talk? They're going to get Bruce Willis to voice it?
All the dogs that people got during quarantine and then took back to the shelter, like he's going to be revenging that, bringing them back to the fickle owners.
Are people now wanting the dogs back again with Delta?
I don't know. But I joke because I don't think that there is a viable path forward with the sequel. But of course they could make it. I just don't think that there's a chance of it being good.
Well, that's because you don't think this is good. But let's put a point on that. Jacob, Stuart, do you recommend Don't Breathe 2? Jacob.
I did think there was a chance this was going to be good. And again, I said at the beginning of the show, this was part of a double feature at the drive-in I went to. Free Guy was first. And so because the listeners out there, your donors, I saw Free Guy and I thought it was going to be a silly movie. It's an incredibly stupid movie. Like Stuart, everything you probably think that movie is, it is. And Arnie, I would really like to hear your take because the computer science of that film is, wow, it's something else trying to really try to understand the logic of that film. But it is a film that goes from like silly, stupid to just illogical, incoherent nonsense by the end.
This is the first I've heard negative about it. Everybody I've talked to loves that movie.
Okay, well, hot take then, I guess. But I had to look up to make sure it was actually a Fox film first because there's a little bit of language, a few crude jokes, but more or less it feels very Disney. I'm like, oh, Ryan Reynolds, he's doing his Computer War Tennis Shoes film at this point now. Like, that's what High School Musical, that's what it felt like to me. I'm like, wow, this is dumb.
Just putting it out there, we may cover it as part of the video game retrospective one day. It's kind of like Pixar.
And that's why I feel comfortable talking about it, because I'm not part of that retrospective. So,
right. Yes. No, I appreciate the opinion. I haven't really been interested in seeing Ryan Reynolds in any movie.
I want to see that movie so bad, but it's not on streaming. And, you know,
well, here's my point of bringing that up. Like, I already had hopes that Don't Breathe 2, it wasn't going to be as good as the first one, but still, like, it's going to be entertaining. And boy, after this piece of garbage sci-fi comedy, like, it's going to be good. Like,
right. It's set up for you in the best possible enjoyment. I'm not getting COVID. I'm in my car.
Exactly. Like, everything is working for this movie. And oh boy, if you would ask me which was going to be the better movie as I was driving to the drive-in, like Free Guy or Don't Breathe 2, like I can't believe Free Guy is the better movie. Like that was the shock to me, because this movie, I'm always ambivalent with the characters during it. Like I never really care about anyone. They never give me a reason to. And when I find out that this is about organ harvesting, like we're going to take it from an 11-year-old girl to give to a meth cook because no one else, like, this is stupid. Like, I thought Free Guy was stupid. Wow. This is really stupid. I looked, people were really upset. How dare you try to make a rapist a hero? Look, go for that. Like, if you think you could pull that off in a really convincing way, a way to make me question my moral standards, go for it. I'm open to that. I want my opinions and beliefs to be challenged. Like, but this is stupid. Like, I can't even get to that kind of anger with this film that you're trying to make a rapist a hero, because it's so stupid with this plot. Like, I never even have that conflict with me. I never care about this film. Its plot is ridiculous that anyone would say that this is either the greatest a sequel screenplay that they saw or whatever. Like, that is bizarre to me. Yeah, it's not a fun film. And that first one, that's a B movie that I really get into with all the sneaking around and just, it's a fun film. This one, I couldn't wait to pull out of that drive-in fast enough and came to the shock that Free Guy was a better film than this. I couldn't believe it. Like, no, stay away from this. Don't breathe. Don't watch it. Don't do anything with it. Not recommend.
Stuart.
I'll start with a positive, and that is that I think that the creators recognized they needed to bring a new flavor to the formula. I appreciate that they took the risk of saying Blind Man is our conflicted anti-villain. Is that what they called it? I'll just call him a complicated man trying to be redeemed. That is more interesting to me than turning him into Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, having him stalk new people. That wouldn't be the way I'd want to see them build the franchise out. They took the more interesting path. And yeah, I recognize that that path also meant that it went towards a genre that action revenge, I tend to not see. I'm not on Rambo. We haven't done Taken. There weren't that many death wishes I thought were very good. It's not horror. I think what I like about Home Invasion is the terror of it. Here, it's more about machismo. It's the fact that, oh, I can take a hammer and the sound of an echo and kill all these youngsters. It's this old grizzled man bullshit that Liam Neeson traffics in. I have no use for it. But that's not why I wouldn't recommend it. If it were well made, if they told that story well, then if he's the martyr, I can go there if this movie were good enough. And the problem is they didn't take those opportunities to make him sympathetic. We never learned why he lost his eyesight. We never saw him interact with his original daughter.
It was the grenade.
What grenade?
They said in the last film he lost his eyesight to a grenade.
Okay, I didn't catch that line, and I felt like we wanted to, like, you get what I'm saying.
You give a flashback of him in the army, right, and that becomes relevant or something. We need a backstory.
Something about him and his original daughter, other than I watched a video of her on a swing set. Like, character. Like, understanding psychology. Learning his name. Apparently he has one. Like, demystifying the monster. They didn't do that work at all. They thought that they could use the structure of the last one, keep it a B picture where we never learn anything more about him, and we would just go along with it. And the truth is, what it means is I just have nowhere to go. I have no Alex in this movie. I'm supposed to care about this, you know, plot device they're calling an 11-year-old girl, and it's just gross and unfun. And I would also say that I just feel like with Fede Alvarez not in the director's chair, that might also be a problem. The screenwriter doesn't have the verve of last time. Even though he got the same composer, the same cinematographer, I don't feel like there's any shots as cool as the ones that were hallmarks in that first movie. So I don't know. Yeah, I think because I don't like Carnivals of Freaks, because I don't like Rob Zombie characters, there's just nothing here for me to root for. You could turn off your brain last time and enjoy it, but here, yeah, call it don't watch. Like, there's just the first not recommend in the series. I don't think that anyone would get anything out of watching this movie.
Well, I did. I mean, I definitely did.
Let us know what it is.
You say it doesn't have the artfulness. I think there were some really great shots in this. In the attack in the hotel there with the bug spray, everything's tinted red. Then you just see it part enough to see the guy coming through the smoke. The thing I can praise most about this is the craft of the filmmaking, which is not to say the director is great. I'm going to credit a lot of it to the cinematographer who worked on the last film as well. But I felt like the score, the cinematography of this was capital G great. I thought that this film looked great at all times. I wish it was as good as it looked. I mean, what was the scene we just loved so much in that first one was them completely in darkness, completely in blackness, trying to run from the blind man. We all thought, oh, they'll probably do a lot more of it this time now that they're confident. Not a single scene of it. Not a moment of it.
No, they did the red smoke. I felt like that was the replacement for it.
Did you ever jump? Did you ever, like, have a moment of, like, oh, they got me? Like, I didn't have that here.
I didn't have that in the first one either.
Oh, yes, you did. When Stephen Lang burst through that door that they were rocking to, great jump scare.
There was a moment with the jump scare with the dog that I kind of went to. But, you know, here's the thing is, this is not a great movie, but it's not as bad as you've painted it out to be either. It is, like you say, I'd put it along the lines of Liam Neeson's direct video Taken ripoffs.
That's pretty damning praise, I'm just going to say right there.
Yeah, if this is...
It's as good as his ripoffs.
Better than Ice Trucker.
Oh, okay. It's not even as good as the first Taken. Okay.
It's as good as Taken 3.
It's better than Taken 3.
It might be.
And the thing that I do go to is Phoenix. I like this little girl, and she is my Alex of this movie. She is the heart of this movie. She's the one I'm rooting for. I'm watching bad people fuck each other up, and there's nothing wrong with a movie with, you know, some bad motherfuckers fucking each other up. It's a fun diversion for the 90 minutes this movie runs. The worst thing about this movie is that it's called Don't Breathe 2. Because Don't Breathe had a lot of inventiveness and a lot of originality and a lot of greatness to it. And by comparison, this thing is pale. I mean, it has none of the qualities other than the good cinematography that made that first one really stand out as a must-see film. But this one has none of that. But what it has is a slight amount of popcorn entertainment of Stephen Lang as a blind guy fucking people up, and a few fun twists. I really did like some of the zigs and the zags the plot took along the way.
Name one. Like, I'm sorry, just so I can understand, what twist did you like?
I liked the twist that the people coming in weren't organ harvesters, they were the father. Then I liked the twist that it wasn't a family reunion, it was a we need your heart.
You did like that?
Yes.
You would completely accept we need the 11-year-old girl's heart for the burnt meth cook.
Oh, absolutely. It's silly. I mean, again, I told you, the first thing I did was look it up, and that's not medically accurate. I think the human centipede is more medically accurate than we're going to steal the 11-year-old girl's heart and put it in the meth head. And we did talk about, why don't you just find another cook? Well, maybe he really loves his wife more than his daughter, I guess, because he'll take his daughter's heart to put in the wife. Whatever. I'm rooting for Phoenix to get out of this, and there are some kooky characters around her that I'm going to enjoy watch die and enjoy watch Phoenix get to hack off the arm of her mother, kind of like that metaphorical umbilical cord finally cutting the ties with the birth parent metaphor. So, yeah, I'll give this a weak recommend. It's not great, but it passed the time well enough. I didn't hate it. I went in with low expectations. It surpassed those expectations. It entertained me enough to say, you know, if you've got nothing better to do and if you loved the first one, prepare to be let down because it's not as good as the first one, but it's fine. It's recommend.
I wonder why we can never be on the same page. Like, because I had that exact same review for Strangers 2, and you swore up and down it was complete garbage.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's so weird that we can never agree on what good trash is. At least we agree this is trash. And I do agree that the classics, the reason why we're calling this Home Invasion Classics, it's the originals. None of these sequels are where it's at. For me, Strangers is the high, high bar. Don't Breathe under that. You're next after that. And then, yeah, you could skip both the sequel. Home Invasions don't lend themselves to a sequel, it seems. I can't think of, I mean, I guess Purge is the one franchise where they get better each time. But typically, it's a novel concept you exploit once and then move on, come up with a new one.
But Purge hasn't been a home invasion movie since the first one either. They've really expanded out of that.
No. Are there ones we should have included? The one that I really wanted to include, but I don't think I could call it a home invasion, but it may be better than all the movies in this, was Green Room. That was the one that I'm like, oh, it would be cool to get this in here.
I wish we would have done that one.
But technically, a green room is not a home, so it didn't feel right to include.
No, that would just be you putting it in because you wanted to review it.
Because it's better than all these films.
Well, I mean, it has a lot of the attributes. Don't get me wrong. They're barricading themselves inside a concert room in the same way that people do in a home.
Yeah, in a green room. It's home invasion in a club.
I'd like to have included Home Alone. That is the biggest grossing home invasion movie there is.
Oh my gosh.
It's called New Classics, and that movie is 30 years old. I would also include Hush. That would be the other one I was thinking of. I don't know if you guys saw it.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, Mike Flanagan, the guy that did the Haunting of Hill House series, he made a blind, I think she's blind and dumb. She can't speak. Woman in a house being chased by a mass killer movie. Doesn't have a lot of of subtext, but it's scary. It works in the ways that I need my home invasion movies to work.
Well, I'm not saying that this is a classic that needed to be included, but again, I'd go back to The Collector and The Collection.
Yeah, you mentioned The Collector and Knock Knock you mentioned, so I guess those are two for me to look up.
Maybe The People Under the Stairs.
30 years old and not new.
Depends on your definition of new. The Strangers isn't that new.
It's 15 years old, not even, like half the time of People Under the Stairs. 21st century, that's what we're going for.
Well, I still think those others could have been included in some way if we're doing on the main feed Straw Dogs.
Yeah, I think you know, it's in the book, but there's Funny Games. I think that's got a place there, but
yes,
not a whole lot coming off the top of my head that I could think of.
Yeah, well, we cover what we can here, and again, Collector is its own series. There's no reason why we couldn't cover it someday.
If fall movie dates keep moving, maybe we will.
But that's not what we're covering next. We are leaving the home, and, well, we're going to the farmhouse, because it's a quiet place, and we finally get to cover this movie that now it's finally here.
Yeah, no matter what, we know that that movie is now even streaming, because when it did come out, it came out quickly. We didn't have time to tie into the theatrical release. We were already committed to our spring-summer series. So, yes, now we finally get to do A Quiet Place 1 and 2. And I saw that first one in theaters. I'm looking forward to talking about it.
And then it's on to Paranormal Activity.
So, everyone, thank you for your support. I hope you're able to continue with us into the gold and platinum levels beyond this. And until next time, get out of my house!
Bye-bye, Detroit.
And Ola, California.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
When are you coming back?
As soon as I can.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
Your lips look sore. That's how you're making your cash out there?
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You hear me or what?
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
There's nothing a man cannot do once he accepts the fact that there is no God.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
You have to be held accountable.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Yeah, whatever, Judge Judy.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2021, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Fuck it. I'm out.
But Norman is highly protective, homeschooling the girl and rarely letting her go into town. Her dream seems to be to go live in the orphanage in downtown Detroit.
It's like an anti-Oliver Twist. Like, please keep me the orphan. I really want that.
Somebody has watched Annie too many times.
But liked Miss Hannigan more than Danny Warbucks.
Miss Hannigan's a great anti-villain, of course.
She wants to go do musical numbers. Raylan and Josephine didn't go to find their daughter for a family reunion. They have an underground surgeon ready to remove Phoenix's heart and put it in Josephine.
Yeah, I heard that.
This is my favorite episode of Breaking Bad.
It did, like, have that quality, didn't it? The spinoff?
Oof, no, Better Call Saul is such a better spinoff than this is.
Breaking Dad?
And stabs her biological father in the back in almost the exact same place where he stabbed Norman. Norman?
Yes.
Yeah, Norman.
I know, right?
Storm and Norman.
He's such a Norman. Norman Nordstrom.